This week's Torah portion is Parshat Bo. It's the third Torah portion of the book of Exodus. We're at Akiva this morning, January 23rd. Last night I gave this class, and it took an hour and 25 minutes, and I went quickly. So what are we going to do this morning? I'll have to leave out some of the stories and really get straight to the point. We're doing something very, very central to understanding the whole matter of the Exodus and to understanding the traditions of the holiday of Passover and especially of the Seder, of Seder night that we do through the Haggadah. Here's an example, the Maxwell House Haggadah. So, without further ado, I'll try and speak quickly, but of course clearly, because if you don't understand, then there's no point in speaking quickly. We're going to introduce a central issue in this week's Parsha by looking at the Haggadah. I photocopied on our pages from the Haggadah Passover. Right? You know, the Haggadah is the little book we use, Anthony, to do our ritual for the holiday of Passover. So, let's look on the first page I photostudied. If you look at the very, very bottom where the staple is, you see that it's page 8, which just means it's pretty near the beginning of the Seder. Pages 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all introductions. Very near the beginning, page 8. And many of us remember, at this point in the Seder, we pick up the matzah, we uncover it, and we say these Aramaic words. Ha lachma anya. Di ahalu av hatana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. In English, this is the bread of affliction which our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. In our family, for example, following a Sephardi custom, we pass the matzah around from one to the other, and each person, when he gets the matzah, puts it on his shoulder and says these words, Ha lachma anya di ahalu av hatana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction, which our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. So we're referring to the matzah, right, the unleavened bread, as lachma anya, the bread of affliction. And we're saying that we ate it, our ancestors ate it in the land of Egypt. So I want to point out two very important points. It doesn't say that our ancestors ate this matzah, this unleavened bread, when we left Egypt. It doesn't say that.
Yeah.
It says, in Egypt. And that'll be important as we read on. Second point. It says that this bread is called the bread of affliction. The matzah is called the bread of affliction. It's not called the bread of freedom. It's called the bread of affliction. That also is going to be terribly important.
Is it affliction or poverty?
For our purposes, it's affliction. And since you asked the question, we'll deal with that for 3 minutes. We'll turn back to the first page of the handout. And we'll look at some verses I have there at the very top of the outline in A1B1. So it means, look at Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3. It's right over there. We're looking at Deuteronomy. So everyone takes out their chumash. I'll tell you the page in my edition, and other people of different editions can tell you where it is there. So it's Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 3, in the English only. I don't have to tell you because no one has my edition. So, what page is it here?
1082.
Page 1082. 1082? Do you have the page? 1082, right? Okay. So, Deuteronomy 16:3, the verse says, and we'll just read the one section that is important for us in this verse. It's near the middle. It says, you shall eat unleavened bread, bread of distress. That's my translation. And the words in Hebrew are matzah lechem oni. That phrase, lechem oni, is the Hebrew that in the Haggadah is translated into Aramaic as lachma anya. Here's the same root, lechem oni, lachma anya, the bread of affliction. So you see that the fact that the Haggadah calls the matzah the bread of affliction comes from the Torah. The Torah calls it the bread of affliction. Now, what does bread of affliction mean? What does it refer to? Ilan asks, is it poverty? Is it suffering? So we can actually find out about that right now as we read the next six sources that I have on the sheet, one from Breishit, and four of them, from Shmot. So we look immediately in Breishit 15:13. So we switch to the book of Genesis, to 15, chapter 15, verse 13. This is what's called in Hebrew, Brit Bein Abtarim, English translation, the covenant between the parts. Abraham, still has no children. He's becoming a very old man. God has promised and promised, and it's not coming. It's not coming to fruition. And then God brings upon him a deep vision that has a lot of frightening imagery in it, and darkness and pain. And in that image, God says to him, yes, you'll have children, but they will be slaves for 400 years. So let's read what it says there. We'll see it relates to what we're talking about. 15:13. In this vision, God says to him, and he said to Abraham, know well that your offspring shall be strangers in a land not theirs, and they shall be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. And Ilana is going to point out to us that those words enslaved and oppressed in Hebrew are
Inu.
The oppression that you'll suffer, your children will suffer in Egypt, doesn't say Egypt, but it's clear that Egypt is the reference here, is Inu Otam. They will oppress them. The word Inu is the same root as Oni, the same root as Anya. It's that same word. In other words, what we're saying is that the Torah describes the Jewish people's slavery in Egypt by the Hebrew root Inu or Oni. And the bread we ate in that affliction is called the bread of Oni, the bread of affliction. So we have a clear thread that brings us from 1 to 2 to 3. That verb is the verb, and that noun, that root, is the word that describes our affliction, and the bread that symbolizes that affliction, and it means the slavery. Now, we really don't have to look at all the other versions I brought here from Shmot, but the reason I brought these four verses to say that many times, in the midst of the Egyptian slavery, at the beginning of the book of Exodus, that slavery is described by that same root. So it's clear that that root describes our slavery, and when that root is connected to the word bread, the bread of slavery, it means the bread that remembers, that symbolizes, that concretizes the years of Egyptian oppression and slavery.
So in the Agadah, this is the bread that the slaves ate.
We'll get to that in another half an hour, but it seems that that might be exactly the case.
I thought the affliction is constipation.
That's probably part of it. Now let's go on to something completely different. In the same Haggadah we've been looking at, the same Maxwell House Haggadah, not looking at the beginning of the Haggadah, page 8, but the end of the Haggadah, which I photostated on the next page. If you look down at the bottom, you see it's page 24 of the Maxwell House Haggadah. And at this stage, after we've talked in the Seder for a good hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, we come to the end of the commandment of telling about our slavery in Egypt, and about our flight to freedom, and we say the following, in the middle of page 24 of the Haggadah, Matzah zo shanu ochlim al shuma, al shum shelo hispik, etc., etc., etc. I'll read in English. This unleavened bread, this matzah, which we now eat, and we point out the matzah to all of the people around the table. What does it mean? It is eaten because, and you expect it to say, it's eaten because, well, it's the bread of slavery, it's the bread of affliction. But it says just the opposite. It is eaten because the dough of our ancestors had not time to become leavened before the Supreme King of Kings, the Most Holy, Blessed be He, revealed Himself unto them and redeemed them, as it said, quoting a verse from Exodus chapter 13, we'll see very soon. They baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought forth out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not tarry, neither had they made any provision for themselves. So from this verse brought here, and from this explanation in the Haggadah, it looks, I'd say, almost the opposite of what we said 5 minutes ago, based on the beginning of the Haggadah. Here it says that we're eating this matzah at our Seder because our forefathers ate it in Egypt. No. Of course, our forefathers ate it when they left Egypt. Outside of Egypt, after they're already gone, according to what this verse says. Secondly, not only is there a discrepancy of where they ate it, in Egypt or outside of Egypt, but there's a discrepancy, a greater one. What does this foodstuff symbolize? According to the first source we saw, it symbolizes slavery and suffering and oppression. According to this source, it symbolizes the flight to freedom.
So maybe the matzah itself is transformed to the Seder.
There's now no need for me to give the whole class.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Right. But we're going to see exactly what Ilana said.
Yeah.
That's 2 points. If not three. So in order to parse this tension or this contradiction, we're going to go back to the verses of the Torah and spend an hour or 50 minutes seeing how it happens that the foodstuff that at the outset symbolized slavery comes later to symbolize freedom. That's the story. So we go back to the first page for the table of contents, the guide of where we're going. And we're in B at this point. And I have a list there of 6 sections of Torah to look at. And we'll look at all of them. So we open up immediately to Shmot, which is Exodus chapter 11, verses 4 to 8. So we're in Exodus. Verses 4 to 8. Anyone has the page can tell everyone else where it is.
379.
379 in the red edition that many of you have. So we are chapter 11, verses 4 to 8. Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, towards midnight, I will go forth among the Egyptians, and every firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die. From the firstborn of Paro sits on his throne, to the firstborn of the slave girl, who is behind the millstones, and all the firstborn of the cattle." We're reading this verse for context. We see now that we're about to read about the 10th plague. Plague of the firstborn is the 10th. There were 9 earlier ones. And Moses tells Paro about the plague, which means that God had earlier told Moses himself about it. It's going to happen on midnight and some night that all the Egyptian firstborn are going to die. "And there shall be a loud cry in all the land of Egypt, such as has never been or will ever be again. But not a dog shall snarl at any of the Israelites, at man or beast, in order that you may know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel." That's the educational element that we learned about last week. "In order that you may know, then all these courtiers of yours," says Moses to Paro, "shall come down to me and bow low to me, saying, 'Depart, you and all the people who follow you, and I will depart.'" In other words, Paro has tried to keep his slaves and not let them go, and even the 9 plagues didn't convince him. The 10th plague will be so terrible, he will want to throw them out and not let them stay. Because he's afraid if they stay, then not only the firstborn will die, but the secondborn and the thirdborn, and everyone will die. And he left Paro's presence in hot anger, and Moses never sees Paro again, at least not in such a context. So that's the background. So we're waiting now for this actually to happen. And we have a scenario of what's going to happen in our mind. The Jewish people are going to be sleeping in their homes or ready to go to sleep at midnight. There's going to be a terrible plague. Paro's going to see all the firstborn are going to die. Paro is going to send his servants down to Moses and say, "Get out of my land as quickly as possible." And the Jews are going to leave extremely fast and haste. How much of this do the Jewish people themselves know? We don't know. Paro knows. Moses knows. Who else knows? We don't know. Now for the meat of the story that has to do with our matzah that we want to learn about, we're going to chapter 12, verses 1 to 14. Going right on where we left off. Chapter 12, verses 1 to 14. "The Lord said to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt, 'This month shall mark for you the beginning of the months. It shall be the first of the months of the year for you.'" Let's stop for a second. So this month, which we now call in Hebrew the month of Nisan, the month that this is taking place in the spring, During this month, when the Jewish people are going to be thrown out of Egypt by Paro, because he's afraid that his whole country will die in a plague, that month that the Jewish people leave Egypt is going to be the first month of the year in the new Jewish calendar. That's what this verse says. It's going to be the first month of the year. And it makes perfect sense. Why? Because this is going to be the month that the Jewish people are born. They're slaves. They're a ragtag band of slaves. They were 70 men that came down to Egypt hundreds of years ago. They grew into a large set of 12 different tribes. But they're still a band of slaves. They're going to be born out of the womb of Egypt when they go from slavery to freedom. That's going to be the birthday of the Jewish people. And that birthday is to be marked by a whole new calendar that begins in the month that they were born, the month that we call in Hebrew today, Nisan. Okay? Then it says that God goes on speaking to Moses in verse 3. Speak to the whole community of Israel and say that on the 10th of this month, each of them shall take a lamb to a family, a lamb to a household. On the 10th of the month. Now, if we assume, as Jewish tradition does, that these verses were spoken on the first of the month, God says, this month shall be the beginning of months. So it's logical, plausible, not necessary, but plausible. It's the first of the month. And then God is saying that 10 days later, on the 10th of the month, every household should designate a lamb for a certain purpose. But if the household is too small for a lamb, there's not enough people to finish it in one sitting, let him share one with a neighbor who dwells nearby. In proportion to the number of persons, you shall contribute for the lamb according to what each household will eat. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a yearly male. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. You shall watch over it till the 14th day of this month, right? So you can have it on your front lawn, tied up for 4 days.
Munching grass.
Excuse me?
Munching grass.
Munching grass. You shall keep watch over it until the 14th day of this month, and all the assembled congregation of the Israelites shall slaughter it at twilight. The Hebrew word twilight, Bein Harbaim, might mean more like late afternoon. The tradition is it was slaughtered before the sun went down. They shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they are to eat it. They shall eat the flesh that same night. So this, they slaughtered it before the sun went down, put the blood on the doorpost, the sun goes down. Realize that if the sun goes down, and it's now nighttime, according to the Hebrew calendar, it's now a new day. Right? It begins at night. So it's another day. You're eating it at night. And how are they eating it? They shall eat the flesh that same night. They shall eat it roasted over fire with unleavened bread. That's our matzah, right? And with bitter herbs. They should eat it with matzah and mororim. Do not eat any of it raw or cooked in any way with water, but roasted head, leg, and entrails over the fire. You shall not leave any of it until morning. If any is left until morning, you shall burn it. So
they eat it on the 15th? Yes.
Yes. So I'll say that right now. We talked about these verses last year, by the way, in this framework. We talked about the symbolism of the sacrificial lamb, the Korban Pesach. And to make a long story short, I'll summarize last year's class of an hour in 30, 40 seconds. We have many verses that tell us that among the many gods of the Egyptians were the sheep, lambs and goats. It's called the sacred animal of the Egyptians. In Hebrew, To'eva. Here, the Israelites would be commanded to slaughter the god of the Egyptians. And if we keep in mind that the Israelites have been in Egypt for over 210 years, according to verses we have in the prophets, they became to a large degree assimilated, worshipped Egyptian idols, became part of Egyptian religion and culture, and then they were enslaved, and now God is in the process of freeing them. This matter of the sacrificial lamb, of taking the god of the Egyptians, holding it for 4 days on your front lawn, then slaughtering it and smearing the blood on the doorpost, and roasting it in fire, which means it makes a lot of smoke and everyone can see, it's an act of civil and religious disobedience. You're taking the god of the Egyptians and flaunting the fact that you're killing it, you're slaughtering it. It would be equivalent to today, take an American flag, laying it down on your grass and trampling it for 4 days, and then burning it in full view, and taking the ashes and smearing them on your front door. It's an act that says, I'm not part of this culture, and I'm willing to cause conflict and even endanger myself to indicate my repudiation of this culture. And what this is, it's an opportunity for the Israelites to decide who they are. Are they part of Egyptian culture? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to follow God and repudiate that idolatry, that culture, and therefore make themselves worthy of redemption? But all that's not our main subject. I'm saying all that just to understand the context of the matzah. The matzah that's eaten with the bitter herbs and the sacrificial lamb that night. So what's going on? Well, the bitter herbs are exactly what you think they are. They're bitter. And it looks like that the Israelites are commanded to eat a last meal in slavery, a final meal. The sacrificial lamb symbolizes their repudiation of that culture. And the maror, the bitter herbs, reminds them of their slavery. It's bitter. And the matzah that they eat, the same thing. It's the bread of affliction. They're being asked to eat bread of affliction one last time. One last time before they go into freedom. Let's just think for a minute. No, actually, I'll leave that for later. We'll go on at this point. And as Ilana pointed out, on the Hebrew calendar, they're eating this at the beginning of the 15th of the month, the nighttime, right? They slaughtered on the 14th at the end of the day in the afternoon. The sun went down. They're eating it on the 15th. And we know from what's about to come, read it right now, that a few hours after they slaughter it and eat it, this plague is going to come and they're going to be thrown out of Egypt. Okay? Let's read on.
Now the slavery is on the 14th, no?
Say it again. Today, in our custom, we do the Seder on the 15th.
15, not the 14th?
No.
It's
yeah. So now we're going to read a little bit more. Verse 11. Just where we left off. This is how you shall eat it. Your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff on your hand. You shall eat it hurriedly. It is a Passover offering to the Lord. For that night, I'll go through the land of Egypt and strike down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and I'll mete out punishments to all the gods of Egypt, I the Lord. And the blood on the houses we are staying shall be a sign for you. When I see the blood, I will pass over you, so that no plague will destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be to you one of remembrance. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord throughout the ages. You shall celebrate it as an institution for all time. So this meal that's to be prepared for at the end of the 14th, before the sun goes down, and eaten on the 15th when it's dark, this meal of the Passover lamb and the bitter herbs and the unleavened bread, the matzah, is to be eaten that 1 year, and then every year henceforth, it's to be eaten again and again and again as a celebration and commemoration of that original meal. And that's what we today call, of course, the Seder, which we prepare for on the 14th of the month of Nisan. We'll begin actually the 15th of the month after the sun has gone down. A institution for all time. In my particular edition, the Jewish Publication Society, verse 15, which we're about to read, is part of verse 14. It's part of the same paragraph. I don't know how it's organized in your English, but I'm going to claim it should be a new paragraph. In the Hebrew, it's all one long paragraph, but I'm going to claim it's a completely new idea. Verse 15 begins something new. 7 days, that's something new. Who heard of 7 days? What's going to happen with 7 days? 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. Until we read about one meal. Now it suddenly says 7 days. On the very first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats unleavened bread from the first day to the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. This is a new idea. There are two new ideas here.
Whoever eats leavened bread. Yeah.
Thank you. Whoever eats leavened bread. Until now, we read about a commandment to eat matzah on that night. Only one night, not 7 nights. And there was no commandment there not to eat leavened bread. It was just said matzah. There was no matter of a prohibition against eating unleavened bread. But now we have two new ideas. One, 7-day holiday, and number two, the prohibition against eating leavened bread. You shall celebrate a sacred occasion on the first day and a sacred occasion on the seventh day. No work at all shall be done on them. Only what every person is to eat, that alone shall be prepared for you. You shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, for on this very day I brought your ranks out of the land of Egypt. You shall observe this day throughout the ages as an institution for all time. So it says a 7-day holiday that's going to be celebrating the fact that God took you out of Egypt. Note that this is being said before they left Egypt. Right?
Did they eat leavened bread also?
But I'm getting to that. Very good point. Very good point. Just wait a second. In the first month, from the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 25th day of the month at evening. No leaven shall be found in your houses for 7 days. For whoever eats what is leavened, that person shall be cut off from the community of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a citizen of the country. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your settlements, you shall eat unleavened bread. I want to make a clear distinction between verses 1 to 14 and verses 15 to 20 that we just read. Verses 1 to 14 are about the Passover sacrifice, the lamb, eaten with unleavened bread, matzah, and bitter herbs, eaten on one night, that night of the 15th, without any mention of a 7-day holiday, without any mention of a prohibition of eating leavened bread. And in that context of that one meal holiday, in that context, the matzah is the bread of affliction. Clearly, it's the bread of slavery. Going along with the bitter herbs, it reminds them of slavery. However, we have a whole different scenario afterwards from verse 15 to 20 about a seven-day holiday in which you're not supposed to eat leavened bread, you're supposed to eat matzah. And what is this 7-day holiday about? Well, we read about it. It says, because on this very day I brought your ranks out of the land of Egypt. This 7-day holiday is about freedom. And in the context of this 7-day holiday, if it says eat matzah, apparently for some strange reason that we do not yet understand, the matzah in this 7-day holiday is somehow the bread of freedom, whereas the matzah in the meal holiday, is the bread of slavery. We don't know how, why, and how this is true, but that's what the verses say. Everyone got that so far? Okay, now let's just point out. No, that's too complicated. No, we'll save that for later. Now, let's just point out that everything we just read was spoken by who to who?
Moshe to Bnei Israel.
No.
God to Moses.
And that's important. In other words, nothing yet has been told to the Israelites. This is what God told to Moses. But what did Moses say to the people?
In our.
Don't know. That brings us to the next set of verses. The next set of verses say, verse 21, Moses then summoned all the Israelites and said to them, so Moses heard what God said, and he's going to tell the Israelite people. But we'll read carefully what he says and what he doesn't say.
What?
Go, pick out lambs for your families, and slaughter the Passover offering. Take a bunch of hyssop, like parsley, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and apply some of the blood that is in the basin to the lintel and to the two doorposts. None of you shall go outside the door of his house until morning. For when the Lord goes through to smite the Egyptians, he will see the blood on the lintel and the two doorposts. And the Lord will pass over the door and not let the destroyer enter and smite your home. Then it goes on to say, you shall observe this as an institution for all time, for you and for your descendants. And when you shall enter the land that the Lord will give you, as he has promised, you shall observe this rite. When your children ask, what do you mean by this rite? You shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice before the Lord, because he passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians, but saved our houses. The people then bowed in homage, and the Israelites went and did just as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. Okay. So,
forgot the main part.
Okay, very good. A lot is forgotten, as it were. When you say the main part, what's the main part?
Well, the leavened bread.
All missing, right? The whole matter of a seven-day holiday is missing. The whole matter of prohibition against eating leaven is missing.
And roasting in the lamb and eating it.
That's also missing.
And he has the zov, which we don't have.
Right, the matter of the hyssop is mentioned here. It wasn't mentioned in the words of God to Moses. So, we have to decipher what's going on. No dates. Okay? That's true. We have to decipher what's going on here. Why did Moses leave out what he left out? And even before that, did he leave out what he left out? In other words, in hundreds of places, the Torah says that God said to Moses, X, and then Moses told the people, X. And in most of those places, it's not a verbatim repetition. It doesn't say that God said to Moses, say X, Y, Z, 5, 4, 3, and then Moses said those exact same words. Sometimes it just says that Moses said it to the people, and it doesn't repeat it. Sometimes it says Moses said it to the people and gives a one-line summary. Sometimes it has Moses saying more to the people than what God had said, which means you have to assume that the Torah didn't want to repeat itself, so when it said that God said to Moses, it didn't list everything that he said. It listed all when Moses spoke to the people. And so in this case, we have to figure out, is it that Moses said everything that God told him to say, and it's just a summary here? Or is it that he really did purposely leave something out?
And why?
So we can
didn't think he'd be believable. Right? We learned that prior. He didn't have confidence, and he had to tell them what he thought they would buy, I guess.
Okay, that's one possibility. I want to examine, actually, from a different point of view. Look at verse 28 that we just read. And the Israelites went and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. That leads me to believe that everything that people had to do right now, Moses did tell them, and they did as the Lord had commanded Moses. It doesn't say it as Moses commanded them, as the Lord had commanded Moses. So apparently Moses did tell them everything they had to know for now, at least, everything they had to do for now. But what did they have to do for now? They had to take the lamb and slaughter it, put the blood, and eat the meal.
They had to keep the lamb out for several days
For several days, right. So that Moses certainly told them, and the Torah just gives us a summary. But it is true, I think, as we're about to see, that there is a whole element of what God told Moses that Moses specifically didn't tell them. How do I know that? Because one element of what God had told Moses, an element that's missing here, that element, it specifically says in the next chapter that Moses told the people. He told it in the next chapter and not here. What is that element? That is the whole seven-day holiday with the eating of matzah and the prohibition of eating leaven. That whole matter we know for certain that Moses didn't say here because Moses says it to the people in the next chapter. So what we have is the following. Moses tells the people only what they have to know for now. Take the lamb, hold it 4 days, slaughter it towards afternoon, evening, put the blood on the doorpost, eat it that night, roast it with matzah and maror, with the loins girded, and wait for the plague to happen. That he tells them, and that they did. But the matter of the seven-day holiday, he doesn't tell them.
He doesn't
again
mention to them the matzah or the bitter herbs.
Right, but that we have to assume he said, because it says that they did everything they were supposed to do. Okay. Everything that God had told Moses that they had to do, they did.
Well, maybe he wanted to wait, for sure.
He wanted to wait. Why would he want to wait?
For sure, so that they would leave.
Exactly. Exactly.
In other words, something would happen.
Well, indeed. Because remember, what did it say in the passage about the seven-day holiday? It said, you're keeping the seven-day holiday because the Lord took his ranks out of Egypt. Moses can't tell the people that now because it didn't happen yet. In other words, those words about the seven-day holiday are meant to be an aftermath of the Exodus. God could tell Moses before it happened because God knows the future. But Moses can't tell the people yet. He can't say, God wants you to celebrate your Exodus. What Exodus? It didn't happen yet. So Moses waits to tell them. This solidifies and concretizes something I said 15 minutes ago, or almost said, that the one day holiday, the one meal holiday of the goat or lamb with the bitter herbs and the matzah, that is a final meal of slavery. That has something to do with symbolizing slavery. But the 7 day holiday with its matzah, that holiday celebrates freedom. And since the event that created the freedom didn't happen yet, Moses doesn't tell the people yet. He waits. And indeed, our tradition teaches us that that year, when they left, they didn't celebrate a 7 day holiday. They only had that one meal. And I actually want to tell you that if you read verses in the books of Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy well, you'll see that in the Torah, there's a holiday called the holiday of Pesach, and there's a holiday called the holiday of Matzah, and they're two separate holidays. Today, we celebrate both holidays together, and we call them Pesach, we call them Passover. They're two separate holidays. There's a holiday called Pesach, and it begins on noon of the 14th of Nisan, and goes until midnight of the 15th of Nisan. How many hours is that, by the way? Calculators? No, it's 12 hours. It's 12 hours. From noon to midnight. And that holiday begins at noon, because that's when you start preparing the lamb and slaughtering it as the sun's beginning to go down. And then we sit down to the meal, and we have Pesach Maror Matzah. We have the Passover and the bitter herbs, the Passover lamb, bitter herbs, and the matzah. And that is called the holiday of Pesach. It's a 12-hour holiday. There's no prohibition of eating chametz, of eating leavened bread in that particular holiday. And it ends at midnight. What happened at midnight? We became free. And that holiday is about slavery, and it's about the spiritual process of repudiation of slavery and idolatry, the lamb. But it's not about freedom. The holiday of freedom is called Hag HaMatzot, the holiday of matzah, holiday of unleavened bread. The holiday of freedom does not begin at noon on the 14th. It begins at the beginning of the 15th when the sun goes down. It's a 7 day holiday. That 7 day holiday was not celebrated the first year because they weren't free yet. It was only celebrated the next year. Now it just so happens that these two holidays have 6 hours of overlap. Right? The holiday of Pesach begins at noon, goes through the going down of the sun until midnight. Then it's over. The holiday of Matzah, the 7 day holiday, begins when the sun goes down at the beginning of the 15th, the end of the 14th. It goes on for 7 days. So there's 6 hours of overlap. When we sit down to our Seder as Jewish people every year, we're celebrating two holidays at once. And that's going to begin to explain the Haggadah that we saw. There are two different explanations of the meaning of matzah, because it's two different matzot, it's two different holidays we're celebrating at once. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So now let's go back to the verses and see how this plays itself out.
When they eat the meal, they're eating the gods of Egypt and they're rejecting the gods of Egypt.
Exactly.
And then they're free.
And then that's the spiritual preparation for becoming free. Right. You can say they're free in a spiritual sense, they're not yet free in a physical sense. That waits for the plague at midnight, and only after the meal is over does the spiritual freedom become physical freedom.
So we as vegetarians are missing this.
Well, we don't, it's not traditional, it's even eaten like.
Right, that's a whole other can of kosher worms. So now, let's continue on with the verses. We are now in verse 29 of chapter 12. Chapter 12, verse 29. So the Israelite people are sitting down now to the meal with the blood on the doorpost, with the bitter herbs and the matzah, and they've just about finished the meal, and it says in verse 29, in the middle of the night, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, and from the first... from the firstborn of Paro, who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the cattle. And Paro arose in the night with all his courtiers and all the Egyptians, because there was a loud cry in Egypt, for there was no house where there's not someone dead. He summoned Moses and Aaron in the night and said, "Go up, depart from among my people, you and the Israelites with you. Go, worship the Lord as you said. Take also your flocks and your herds as you said, and be gone. May you bring a blessing upon me also." The Egyptians urged the people on, impatient to have them leave the country, for they said, "We are all dead." So the people took their dough before it was leavened, their netting bowls wrapped in their cloaks upon their shoulders. So what happened here? What happened is...
So there were no instruction of matzah, it was an emergency.
Right, exactly. All that story about a seven-day holiday in which you don't eat leavened bread, the people had not heard that yet. It wasn't yet relevant. As far as they're concerned, they thought they were having bread when they woke up in the morning. They had eaten matzah for the meal, but tomorrow they're going to have bread. And they had heard they'd be leaving Egypt, so they put all the dough in the kneading troughs to rise that night. In the morning, they'd wake up, it would be ready, they would bake it, they'd make provisions, and they'd leave Egypt. What happened? They're forced to wake up in the middle of the night, perhaps they'd even go to sleep, leave before the dough rises, and it ends up, almost against their will, that they have to eat matzah again in the morning when they thought they'd be eating bread. Let's read on. We don't need to read verse 35 or 36. 37 says, "The Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Sukkot, about 600,000 men on foot, aside from children. Moreover, a mixed multitude went up with them, and very much livestock, both flocks and herds. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough that they had taken out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, since they had been driven out of Egypt and could not delay, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves." So they ate matzah the night before as a commandment. This morning they were thinking of eating bread, of course. They were forced to eat matzah again in the morning because they didn't have time for the provisions for their dough to rise. And now was created the historical circumstances that turn matzah into the bread of freedom.
Just a minute.
Wait, let me finish the thought.
Sounds culinary.
Wait a second. They were forced to eat matzah in their flight to freedom, not because they were commanded to eat matzah, because rather they had no choice. That's what they had. And therefore now matzah will become the symbol of the flight to freedom. And now in the coming verses we're about to see, now Moses will tell them what God had told him 2 weeks ago, that there's going to be a seven-day holiday in which matzah symbolizes freedom. Now Moses can tell them that because now the historical circumstances that create matzah as the bread of freedom took place. Ilana?
It makes simply in culinary ways no sense. If they have a dough that they prepare the evening before to rise for bread the next morning it has risen, whether they ran with it or not.
Right, okay. That's actually a question that that many ask. What happened? What happened?
There's a lot of inconsistency there,
right?
Because between the time the Egyptians died and Moses was called and they tell the people to leave.
It could be that they baked it when they woke up at midnight. That would explain. Or there are those who say that since they put on their backs, it stopped rising. That it only rises when it's left alone. That's really true. My wife always tells me that when she puts the dough for challah in the pan to rise, don't touch it. If you touch it, it
comes down.
It deflates.
Could it be that this was a miracle because they were walking through the desert, which is hot? Okay.
The desert is not hot at night. It's extremely cold.
The desert is very cold.
No, they went through the night, okay? And the dough was on their shoulder. But no matter how you leave a dough, with human body touching it, it will rise.
There's no need for miracles here, though. If the Torah has miracles, it says it. But there's miracles, there's lots of miracles. Here it doesn't say any miracles. There's no need for miracles. Sorry.
a door right with for at least 2 hours with rice. So I would like to hear.
Okay, look, but I'm not interested. I don't have enough time. I'm sorry, but okay. I'm not interested in the technical details. Right, I want to get to the point.
Right.
I apologize. So we're going to now read the rest of the verses. We are now in chapter 13, verses 1 to 12. So now they've left Egypt. And now they've made their unleavened bread while leaving Egypt. And eaten it while leaving Egypt. Beginning at 13, the Lord spoke further to Moses, saying, "Consecrate to me every firstborn, man and beast. The first issue of every womb among the Israelites is mine." So, given this one line of God to Moses, you now expect Moses to gather the people and tell them what God said. It's not what happens. And Moses said to the people, "Remember this day on which you went free from Egypt, the house of bondage, how the Lord freed you from it with a mighty hand. No leavened bread shall be eaten." What? He mentions no leavened bread, but God didn't talk about that. God said, consecrate the firstborn. Now, we understand this matter of consecrate the firstborn. It makes perfect sense. Since right now, just a few hours or days ago, the Israelites had seen all the firstborn of the Egyptians die, and all their firstborn, the Israeli firstborn, of course, very, very thankful that they're not Egyptian, they didn't die. So now, all the firstborn Israelis are consecrated to God because they owe God their lives, that they weren't killed, together with the firstborn of the Egyptians.
But he doesn't give him any house.
Wait a second. But instead of Moses telling the people what God said to tell about the firstborn, he says, this matter of no leavened bread shall be eaten. You go free in this day, in the month of Aviv, Nisan. So when the Lord has brought in the land of Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Hivites, Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, lands flowing with milk and honey, you shall observe in this month the following practice. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the seventh day there shall be a festival of the Lord. Throughout the 7 days unleavened bread shall be eaten, no leavened bread shall be found with you, and no leavened bread shall be found in all your territory. And you shall explain to your son on that day, it's because of what the Lord did for me when I went free from Egypt. So this is what I was referring to 10 minutes ago. This is what God had told Moses on the first day of the month, and it's what Moses did not tell the people when he told the people about the Passover lamb and the matzah on the morrow. Moses didn't say this. He waited until after they had left. Why did he wait? Because he realized, he understood, that its significance is only real after they leave. Because it says you're going to eat matzah and not leaven for 7 days as a celebration of going free. You can't tell the people that until they actually went free. And until historical circumstances prevented the bread from rising, prevented them from eating leavened bread, so they had to eat matzah. Only after that happened could Moses tell the people that you're supposed to celebrate it for the future. And indeed, according to Jewish tradition, that first year, there was no seven-day holiday. Only the next year was there a seven-day holiday. And then Moses goes on to tell the people about the consecration of the firstborn. Okay, we now have all the background to start putting this all together and understanding it as exegetically and then theologically. And then psychologically. We have a lot of work to do in a short amount of time. So understanding it exegetically, that is to say, the background of the verses. So let's think now. We have this matzah that's called the bread of affliction, lechem oni, and it was eaten by commandment in their last meal as slaves, together with the bitter herbs and the sacrificial lamb. And we said that somehow it symbolizes slavery. Now, why does it symbolize slavery? I want to point out two salient characteristics of matzah. One is that it tastes like cardboard. Right? It's not tasty. There's no sweetness to it. It's not easy to digest. And there's an indication here that it actually causes constipation. Right? It's a problematic food. Another salient characteristic of matzah is it's made very quickly. Right? In a rush, you can make it. And that's exactly what I want to talk about. The two points. One is what Ilana said, the other is something prior. You could say, that the Israelite slaves ate matzah during 210 years of slavery. Why would you say that? Well, if it's called lechem oni, the bread of affliction, and it's eaten to symbolize slavery, that's probably because they ate it for 210 years of slavery. Why would that be the case? If you say, as some commentators do, that it was the Egyptians who fed the slaves, well, what do you feed slaves if you want to save money?
The worst food.
You give them the worst food that lasts a long time in their stomach. They'll ask for it only once a day or even less, right? So you put together some flour and water, save money on spices and on sugar, give it to them as it is without any taste, without any salt. They eat it, they're satisfied, they can work. That's one possibility. Or you can say another possibility, that it wasn't the Egyptians who gave the slaves their food. Rather, the Egyptians said to the slaves, make your own food, but you only have 5 minutes to do it. What would they make for themselves? Matzah. And that would be a second reason why they would have eaten matzah for all those years of slavery. That's what it would be. Another reason it would be lechem, only the bread of affliction. Now, let's just think a little bit further about that. What we just pointed out is two aspects of slavery. If you look at matzah from the point of view being... I'm speaking too quickly. From the point of view of being cardboard and tasteless, that symbolizes that slavery is difficult. Okay. Is suffering. If you look at it from the point of view that matzah is the bread of slavery, the bread of affliction, because it has to be made quickly, that symbolizes that a slave's time is not his own. He doesn't have time to make bread, only has time to make matzah. In the halakha, these two aspects of matzah are both emphasized. The matzah we eat at the Seder, that night at the meal, the matzah of slavery, is forbidden to be chocolate-covered, forbidden to have any sugar, forbidden to have any raisins. It only is water and flour in order to symbolize that it's not good, it's not tasty, it's suffering. And the second aspect of matzah as the bread of slavery has to be made quickly to symbolize that the slave's time is not his own. That's also in the halakha. It has to be made quickly, even quicker than you'd be required to make it to prevent it from becoming leaven. It's made as quickly as possible to symbolize that the slave's time is not his own.
So what, these chocolate-covered matzahs are not kosher?
Chocolate-covered matzah is not kosher for the Seder. It's not leaven, so it's kosher for these 7 days, but it's not kosher for the first night. Because remember, the first night is a different holiday. It's in a different symbolism. So now let's think of the following. If we were slaves in Egypt, and we'd been eating matzah for 210 years, and being constipated by it, and hoping for something that tastes better, hoping for something fluffier, hoping for something that is a symbolism that our time is our own, and then God tells us, this night, the 15th of Nisan, is your last night as slaves. Eat the matzah and the bitter herbs to remember slavery, but tomorrow you'll be free men and women. You can imagine everyone's hoping to go to sleep and dream about
bread.
Bread that's fluffy, bread that has some taste to it, bread that is sweet, bread that goes down smoothly. And then what happens? They have to eat matzah the next morning because they flee from slavery to freedom, and the bread of affliction becomes the bread that symbolizes
freedom.
Make matzah pie.
Great. And indeed, at our Seder that we have every year, we're celebrating two holidays, as I said. We're celebrating the meal, the holiday of Pesach, in which the matzah is the bread of slavery, but we're also celebrating the beginning of the holiday of freedom that will go on for 7 days, in which matzah is the bread of freedom. And that's why in the Haggadah, we read that there are two opposing explanations of the symbolism of matzah, because there really are two matzot, in a certain sense. It's two different holidays, two symbolisms, one layered upon the other. That is the exegetical piece of our studies for this morning. And to me, it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's insightful, etc., etc., etc. But now, what does it mean in a spiritual sense? What does it mean theologically? And what does it mean spiritually? So I think we have a deep question here. Historical circumstances could have been engineered to create different symbols. It could have been that the Israelites slept on cardboard for 210 years. Mm-hmm. So we would symbolize slavery by holding up a piece of cardboard. And it could have been that they would have gone out to freedom on bicycles. And we'd symbolize freedom by bicycles. Cardboard and bicycles. But why does the Torah have it that the same food is a double symbol? To me, that is a theological question that demands an answer. It could have been arranged differently. Why did God arrange it like this? That the same substance, the same food, the same object that was a symbol of slavery becomes a symbol of freedom.
Well, that's the essence of freedom. It's the same person, and he's not the same person.
You did it again. You took it right out of my mouth. Just have to explain it. So, there clearly is a statement here about the similarity between slavery and freedom. That in some sense, freedom is not the total lack of slavery, but in some sense, freedom incorporates slavery. I'm saying things very, very... That's it, right. That freedom is not the lack of boundaries. It's not the lack of responsibility. It's not the lack of obligation. You could have thought differently. You could have said that slavery is when someone forces me into a framework. Freedom is when there's no framework. There's no responsibility. There's no boundaries. Freedom is when I just sit back and do whatever I want. That's clearly not true. And it could be, by having the same object symbolize both slavery and freedom, there's a deep statement about the responsibility and the framework of obligation that has to be part of freedom, or else it's not real freedom. That's a real deep statement. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but a little bit. Let's look at the words of Martin Buber, a 20th century Jewish philosopher, who wrote, and we have it here on the sheets in E4, Martin Buber wrote, "Freedom is not a matter that can be actualized according to any whim arbitrarily. Rather, the central meaning of freedom and its very purpose is the fulfillment of an ideal." Now, ideal means that I wake up in the morning and I don't do what I want to do right now. I have the obligation that I've created for myself of following an ideal, of following a course of action that's going to bring forth that ideal in the future. Freedom is about sublimating present desires and whims of the moment, sleep a little bit, eat a little bit, watch television a little bit, sublimating that to the framework of a larger ideal, of a responsibility. That's another way of saying what the Torah says again and again and again and again, that freedom is servitude to God. In Hebrew, the word eved, avod, right, we were slaves to Paro, and we become slaves to God. Now, in English, it doesn't sound good, because we don't like the word slavery. In Hebrew, the word for serve, worship, is the same word for servitude and slavery, to indicate to you exactly what we're saying. That the Torah wants to say that you don't wake up in the morning as a free person and eat bread. Bread would symbolize that your time is all your own. You can just sit back and watch it rise. You have to take an hour, two, three, four, five, it just doesn't matter. Freedom is not bread. Freedom is matzah. Freedom has a time constraint to it. Freedom has constraints in general. Freedom is not always just sugar and spice and everything nice. Freedom, real freedom, has to have the framework of servitude to a higher ideal. And then one really feels free and feels that he's serving something higher than himself. And you feel a sense of purpose, of meaning. Freedom that would be bred would be meaningless. There'd be no sense of being free to serve an ideal, to be greater than yourself, to accomplish something, to bring to fruition a goal. Another way of saying it is what Rabbi Yehuda Levi said, the Jewish poet 1,000 years ago, in E3, temporal slaves are indeed the slaves of slaves.
Where is that?
The first page. E3. While only the slave of God is truly free. Therefore, as every human being searches for his portion, my soul says, God is my portion. I'm going to now, I know it's late, so if someone has to leave, you can leave. I, for many years, thought the things we said and finished here, and I always felt something was missing. Because it feels to me a little bit like, if we left it here, we'd be pulling the wool over people's eyes. Because we're basically claiming that slavery is freedom and freedom is slavery. Mm-hmm. And that sounds just like fooling you with semantics. I think we have to go one step further and really try and understand, could this really be true, or is it all just a game in which the rabbis are fooling us into becoming slaves when what we really want is true freedom, which is to do whatever we want, that's freedom. In what sense can I really prove, at least philosophically ground, the hypothesis that real freedom does have an element of slavery in it? So I want to just go one step further, and again, I understand that it's late, you can leave. There are two completely different philosophical explanations of what we just talked about. And we don't have time for both. I'll take one. This is the approach of Rav Avram Yitzhak HaKohen Cook, Rabbi Abram Isaac HaKohen Cook, the first chief rabbi of the reconstituted Jewish settlement in the land of Israel at the beginning of the 20th century. And he has a philosophic explanation of the things we just talked about. And it goes like this, in my own words. My personal experience, and I'm talking about me personally, is that in most cases, I accomplish what I want to accomplish when I have deadlines and a framework and a boss. And I accomplish the least of what I want to accomplish when I'm on vacation. All the books I want to read, that I really want to read them, I, the deep inner me, wants to read, I'll read more of them when my work, when my framework, my obligation forces me. Then when I'm on vacation, I'll try, but I'll fall asleep. Or I'll go to something else, or I'll clean the house, or I'll go out and I'll talk to friends. And I won't do what I want to do. When I'm not forced to do what I want to do. Now, that's paradoxical. What do you mean? If I'm free, why can't I be free to do what I want to do? But somehow it turns out that I, when I'm free to do what I want to do, don't do what I want to do. And if I'm free to do what I want to do, but I don't do what I want to do, in a certain sense, I'm not free. Well, why am I not free? Because we all know that there's a certain dualism to human nature. Everyone who's been on a diet knows that's true. You want to lose weight. And it's easy to lose weight. Just exercise and don't have the cookies. It's easy. But why is it so hard? Because there's a force within us that says, eat the cookies. And it's so real. It's so real. Jewish tradition calls it Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination.
Agnon calls it my neighbor.
My neighbor.
My neighbor whispered in my ear.
Right? And the neighbor doesn't live next door. He lives with you in the same room, in the same heart. There's a material, short-sighted force within us that is within us, and yet it's something else. And that force enslaves us. It enslaves us to eat the cookies. It enslaves us not to read the book you want to read. It forces you not to be free. A fact. It's just a fact of life. That when you have no framework, no Weight Watchers, no buddy to tell you what to do, you end up not doing what you want to do.
No routines.
Mm-hmm. Then comes the Torah. Says Rav Kook, and this is my words, the Torah is like Weight Watchers. It helps you do what you want to do, what the real you want to do, not what the Yetzer wants to do, what the real you wants to do. Rav Kook's understanding of the deeper meaning of Torah is that Torah has 70 facets. The Torah is a large world of all the possibilities of human fulfillment. And everyone finds in the Torah their own letter, their own niche. that will provide the framework for them being what they want to be and who they want to be. Without the Torah, without a framework of this sort, you tend not to be who and what you want to be. The Torah will free you from that yetzer, from that obligation, from that corporal, material, temporal, short-sighted neighbor to be who and what you really want to be. So indeed, matzah, I'm bringing it all together now, matzah in that sense is a symbol of freedom. Matzah is about remembering that you need a master. If the master is not going to be Paro, and thank God it's not Paro, if you don't find a master who has your own best interests in mind, you'll end up degenerating to bread. Just doing whatever, which is doing nothing, which is not having a goal and a framework for self-fulfillment. The Torah is that master that you take upon yourself willingly to push you in the direction and provide a framework for self-fulfillment, for true freedom. And that's why matzah, the bread of slavery, is the true bread of freedom. And that's why in the Haggadah it has that double significance. That's why lechem oni, the bread of affliction, becomes the bread of freedom.
That's why we call God Adonai.
Master.
My master.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it also be said that they were forced to eat matzah by Pharaoh and the gods. And that night, in the next day, they chose to eat matzah to show their appreciation.
That would be nice, but it's not true. They were forced to eat matzah. They couldn't eat anything else because they fled and didn't have time to rise. Again, you have to allow yourself to be forced.
Right. They chose to follow God.
Right, they chose to leave Egypt. That's true. They could have stayed in Egypt.
And they ate the matzah in happiness.
Right, exactly right. You have to choose to accept the slavery upon you.
Right.
So,
then it's freedom.
Going to Egypt to become slaves helps us to become slaves to God. Because we learn how to jump in Egypt. So when God says jump, we say, how high?
So,
we're not that good.
Yeah, we still have free will.
We learn to be slaves in Egypt in order to be slaves to God.
That certainly is an element of truth in it. I wouldn't take it too far, because there is a difference between these two types of slavery, but absolutely there's an element of that in it. Yeah.
Rabbi, the freedom you were describing is freedom within the being part of B'nai B'rit, people of the covenant.
That's absolutely true.
Okay, but independently of that, I don't think that there's conditional freedom within.
Now, if anyone wants to see a strong critique, a criticism of what I said, from a philosophical point of view, read an essay written by a famous British philosopher who happened to be Jewish, passed away 10 years ago, Sir Isaiah Berlin, an essay called Two Concepts of Liberty, in which he rips to shred everything I said. But I don't accept what he says, but it's a powerful philosophical argument. I think it's called Two Concepts of Liberty.
And it says that it's based on an article you've written. Where is that to be found?
It's probably... Oh, this was 20 years ago. It's probably on a website of Nishmat. If you can... You can look up... You can Google the multiple meaning of matzah. If you don't find it, you can look on the website of Nishmat. And it's probably there. If not, I can send it to you.
Nishmat?
Yeah.
Nishmat Am?
Just Nishmat.
Nishmat.
Okay, so think about it, absorb it, grapple with it.
Would you take another hour and read everything?
It's all on tape.